This is Rob Long with Martini Shot for The Ankler. I was with some stand-up comedians recently, all of them very successful, when the subject of another stand-up comedian came up, and one of them said, "Hey, I know people like that guy, but I don't get him at all. I mean, he's got like two premises for his material." And, you know, that may be true, I don't know. But the comment reminded me of a meeting I had long ago with a highly awarded, well-regarded actor who mentioned another actor in his same basic age range and said, "Look, I know why the Academy felt like they had to honor him, but honestly, he turns in performances that are just noise." Again, I'm not pointing fingers, despite the fact that I'm basically a very emotionally centered person who wishes everyone well. Please stop rolling your eyes. I, too, have often made comments along the lines of, you know, something like, "Oh, you think that writer is funny? Really? I mean, I know he's successful, but I don't get it." Now, I told you that so I could tell you this story. A friend of mine has a 9-year-old son who plays tennis and is very serious about it. He's serious about all of his activities, it turns out, but tennis is a big one. And a few weeks ago, my friend noticed a hand-lettered note pinned up to his son's bulletin board. "Be better than Ryan," it said. Ryan, it turns out, is another 9-year-old boy in my friend's son's class who is slightly better than he is at tennis, and slightly better, it turns out, at math and a few other things besides. And my friend's son's goal was direct and specific: be better than Ryan. And he put up a note on his bulletin board to keep him focused and on track. So my friend and his wife did what progressive parents are supposed to do, and that is try to persuade their children not to try so hard. "We just want you to be the best you can be," they said. "Why not think about changing the sign to something like, you know, 'Be better than yesterday' or something? Why does it have to be Ryan-centric?" they said. "You know, there's a Japanese concept called Kaizen," they told him. "Continuous improvement is what that means. Why not just say to yourself each day, 'Hey, I just want to be a little bit better today for me, for myself.'" None of that worked, of course. All they got was the same look kids give parents at soccer games when the parents pretend that no one is really keeping score. "What's the score?" you can ask any parent, and what you'll get is, "That's really not the point. We're all about the spirit of play and the joy of good sportsmanship." "What's the score?" you can ask any kid, and what you get is, "It's 4-3, we're killing them." "But what happens," my friend asked his determined son, "when Ryan comes over here after school or for a sleepover? What if he sees that sign? What then?" And his son assured him that he would remember to take the sign down before Ryan enters the house, and that was that. Be better than Ryan stayed up. A few days later, though, my friend's son informed him that disaster had in fact struck. Ryan had indeed come over to play after school, had seen the sign, and naturally demanded to know what that was all about. "Were you embarrassed?" my friend asked. "A little," his son said. "So what did you do?" my friend asked. "Well," his son began matter-of-factly, "I told Ryan that I needed that sign to remind me to be better than him at tennis and math and stuff." In other words, you know, he told the truth. He revealed to his friend that he didn't feel as good at tennis or math or some other stuff as he was, and that he intended to make up the difference, and that he thought about it every single day. In other words, he did what grown-ups would never do. He did what pretty much everyone in the entertainment industry cannot do, which is to say, "I want to be better than that other person," rather than, "That other person isn't so good." His competitive streak may be bald and out there, but at least he's harnessing it to useful ends. "And then what happened?" his father asked. "I don't know," his son said. "We played video games and then had pizza." And that is something a lot of us in the entertainment industry don't do either because of gluten and carbs, but that's a whole other thing. And my friend still tells that story with a kind of baffled expression, like, who is this kid? This kid who just says the truth without being embarrassed or weasel wordy or self-conscious in any way. And where did he learn this? And where can I learn this? A friend of mine who works for a large financial institution told me the other day that he and his team are trying to moderate the kinds of things they say off the cuff in casual meetings or at lunch. The usual give-and-take banter they'd engage in as Zoom calls got going or over a turkey wrap had become, thanks to a few bad financial years and some major corporate restructuring, you know, kind of negative and pessimistic, sharply critical of others, maybe even a little snippy, gossipy, and personal. I'm not sure how they noticed that, because I'm pretty sure I wouldn't notice that. A lot of those things, like being pessimistic, gossipy, critical, snippy, they're pretty much the definition of being a comedy writer in a room with other comedy writers in a business like the entertainment industry in a city like Los Angeles. I mean, at any given moment in any office in Hollywood, I don't just mean comedy writers, I mean everyone. Half of any workday is spent hashing and rehashing other people's failures, or slightly more frequently, trying to twist someone else's moderate success or non-failure, a movie that just broke even, say, or a show that does okay in the ratings, a project that got far but didn't quite get produced, into some kind of abject defeat. And I assumed until I talked to my friend in finance that this kind of thing was specific to the entertainment industry, but apparently it's widespread. And his team at least thought it was hurting productivity, so they decided to do something. Before making a comment or a digging observation, they agreed to ask themselves three questions. Is what I'm about to say true? Is it kind? And is it necessary? So far, my friend reports, the results have been really interesting. These days, when they gather for lunch, they mostly eat together in total silence. Conference calls and Zoom meetings last a few minutes at the most. No one says anything to anyone at any time. There is no banter. No one, it seems, can think of anything to say that is true, kind, and necessary. I mean, the true and kind criteria, he told me, they're not really the problem. It's easy to think of something both true and kind, or at least true and neutral, to say about a colleague or a new business strategy from company HQ. What's harder, what in fact is almost impossible, is to say something that is necessary, because, he told me, in the world of finance, not much really needs to be said. Most of it is already there on paper or in a PowerPoint deck. So obviously, to everyone, it doesn't need to be said out loud. It's different in your business, I guess, he said to me. And I could say that he was wrong, but that wouldn't be necessary. I mean, of course he was wrong. I absolutely need to give this note about Act Two needing a little more jeopardy, I can hear a young executive think to him or herself during what should be a very short notes call. It's imperative that I tell everybody in this room why I think the recent Marvel movie didn't match expectations at the box office, someone unconnected to that picture or studio will say loudly at the coffee shop. Here is why I feel it's necessary to say that this or that actor did not get an Oscar is a frequent lunch conversation between people who really have zero idea why that happened or why it did not happen. We tell each other all sorts of unnecessary things all day, every day, in pretty much every business. And if we try hard, we can be more truthful and more kind, but there's really no way we can limit ourselves to the necessary. I mean, we can be nice, but we can't shut up. And in show business especially, we feel the need to keep talking until we find something we can really take a crap on. I once read an interview with the famous late fashion designer Karl Lagerfeld, and he was describing a room and complaining about the way it was decorated. It was a lot of Louis XV mixed with Louis XVI, he said. And then he added, ugh. So what he didn't like, just to be clear, was when people mix up furniture from the period of Louis XV, which was roughly 1700 to 1750, with the furniture from the period of Louis XVI, which was roughly 1750 to 1800. And I looked it up. I mean, here is the chief difference, the ugh factor, you might say, between the two. The Louis XV chairs are curvy and oval-backed, and the Louis XVI chairs are curvy too, but they sometimes have shield-shaped backs. And apparently, when they're in the same room together, the only civilized response is ugh. I mean, it's impressive to have a pet peeve that specific. And also one that I'm pretty sure very, very few people share. It's unlikely that any but a handful of people reading that interview, when they came to the ugh part, nodded and smiled in recognition. So true, Carl, so true, said probably nobody. Stand-up comics, of course, become famous for identifying and describing things that bug all of us, or at least the plurality of us. Don't you hate it when, is how a lot of comedians still get their starts. They connect with audiences by sharing the common irritations of life. The guy behind you who honks his horn one nanosecond after the light turns green. Trying to buy apples at the supermarket without making the apple pyramid come tumbling down. Putting your credit card into that thing and it says do not remove card, and then suddenly it says remove card and beeps alarmingly so that you always feel like however you're doing it wrong and too slowly. And of course, the entire universe of complaints around printer ink. Don't you hate it when? They mix up Louis Kahn's with Louis Says is probably what we might call niche comedy, something for Hulu maybe, tightly targeted at decorative arts historians and museum period room curators. But if you're Karl Lagerfeld, I don't know, maybe it is irritating to see all of those chairs, some oval-backed and some shield-backed, all mixed up and jumbled together, higgledy-piggledy style. If you're someone like Karl Lagerfeld, all you think about, presumably, is the way things look, the style of the stuff around you, the design choices that had been made. So if you're Karl Lagerfeld, mixing up the Louis might really be hard to shut up about. But I am not Karl Lagerfeld, and neither are you. But for some reason, I get into Lagerfeld-like patterns all the time. I was watching a show last week with a friend of mine, and I didn't realize that I was being Karl Lagerfeld about it. The reason that scene is overlit is because they wanted to cut the budget. See that background? That background was reused. Oh no, I said out loud. This part is so clearly a response to a network executive's note. And then later, okay, this part is stupid, but I bet the actor insisted on it, even though it's a detour from what the episode is really about. And then later, see, I think they had agreed to do 7 episodes, but they only really had 5 episodes worth of plot elements, so that's why these 2 episodes are so slow and not funny. And finally, wait, that whole story thread just resolution comes in a phone call? Ugh. As I said, I did not realize that I was Lagerfelding until I looked up and realized from the expression of the person I was watching it with that I was slowly removing all of the pleasure and the joy out of the show. And doing it to myself, too, in the way that I imagine Karl Lagerfeld seeing the chaos of Louis Kahn's and Louis Says prevented anyone else from enjoying the canapes at the fashion show or wherever, but also prevented himself from enjoying them, too. Now, Karl Lagerfeld was probably correct that mixing your Louis is a suboptimal move, just as I had valid points to make about the overuse of some tricks of the screenwriting trade. Sometimes, though, it seems like that we are all Lagerfelding each other all the time, on social media, in politics, on cable news. I mean, half the problems we face right now are caused, in a way, by one group looking at something that's basically okay. I mean, it's not perfect, it's not ideal, but it's okay, and dismissing it with a Lagerfeldian ugh. Am I ruining this for you? I asked my friend while we were watching that show. And I didn't get an answer, which is another way of getting an answer. We watched the rest of the show together in silence, and honestly, it's a pretty good show. Overlit, but there are reasons for that. And that's it for this week. Next week, we will bring ourselves to the work. For The Ankler, this is Rob Long with Martini Shot.